Isaiah chapter 7, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to make war against it, but could not prevail against it. And it was told to the house of David, saying, Serious forces are deployed in Ephraim. So his heart and the heart of his people were moved as the trees of the woods are moved with the wind. We have four characters in this cast this morning. We have Syria and Assyria. They're actually two different kings, two different countries. People often confuse them. Assyria is north and east of Israel, and then Syria is more north. Then the third entity is Israel, or the northern tribes, the 10 northern tribes, and then we have the southern two tribes. Remember, Israel, the nation, was split into two after King Solomon. His son wasn't that great of a leader, and he wanted to tax people like crazy, and the northern 10 tribes said, see you later, buddy. And so we have two kingdoms. And what has happened is Israel, the northern 10 tribes, has made an alliance with Syria. And they're coming down to attack the fourth character in our cast this morning, which is Judah and Benjamin, the southern two tribes. We often call them the House of David, or it's Jerusalem, the city, which was their capital, or Judah. So Israel and Syria are attacking Judah. And then we have Assyria, who's that really mean king, the one that when he captures people, he would actually put hooks in their jaws to carry them away. And he really tortured his captives. Just a tough, tough guy. So as we read this again, it came to pass in the days of Ahaz. Now, Ahaz is the grandson of Uzziah, who is the really neat king. The neat king that Isaiah just liked, and because he loved the Lord and did right in the sight of the Lord. But his grandson, Ahaz, did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord. And we'll see that today. In the day of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to make war against it, but could not prevail against it. And in verse 2, when they hear that Ephraim, part of Israel, in other words, Syria is aligned with Israel, they're all coming after us, their hearts were like the trees in the wind. They were terrified. I want to flip back to 2 Kings chapter 16, and we're going to refer to this often, so keep your finger in both places, 2 Kings and Isaiah. Second Kings chapter 16. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. It's interesting. Everything we read tonight about him, he accomplished it all in just 16 years. He really did a lot of damage in 16 years. And he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord his God, as his father David had done. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. The northern tribes really fell apart before the southern tribes fell apart. They went sideways much earlier. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Indeed, he made his son pass through the fire according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel. Now, there was a God that they worshiped, and they'd make this bronze statue, and they'd build a fire inside the statue and heat this thing up red hot, and his arms were out like this. And what they would do is they'd take their children and set them on the red hot arms and burn their children. It was an offer to Molech, was the god, and it was an offer really of a god of pleasure and bounty for their crops. And so they're offering their children, hoping that this blessing of pleasure and bounty would come upon them. It's terrible. That's why God drove these people out of the promised land when he brought Israel in. They were just a terrible people. So he followed that God and burned his child. And he sacrificed and burned incense, verse 4, on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. Then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to make war. And they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him. So verse 5 is where we are in Isaiah. So let's flip back to Isaiah, but keep your finger in Kings. Notice verse 2. Well, notice verse 1. Came to pass in the days of Ahaz, and I won't go through his title, that the king of Syria and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to make war against it, but could not prevail against it. You see how we're in this is the same event we're reading about. And their hearts were like the trees and shaking. We'll pick it up in verse 3, chapter 7, verse 3 of Isaiah. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out now to meet Ahaz, you and Shear-Jashub, your son, at the end of the aqueduct from the upper pool, on the highway to the fuller's field, and say to him, take heed and be quiet. Do not fear or be faint-hearted, for these two stubs of smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin and Syria, and the son of Remaliah. I don't know why he doesn't say Pekah. Just say his name, Pekah, but he's called the son of Remaliah a lot. Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have plotted evil against you, saying, let us go up against Judah and trouble it, and let us make a gap in its wall for ourselves, and set a king over them, the son of Tabel. That's the king they were going to put over them. Thus says the Lord God, it shall not stand, nor shall it come to pass. For the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be broken, so that it will not be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son, or Pekah. If you will not believe, surely you shall not be established. So God is saying, relax, you guys. It's not going to stand. I'm going to take care of it. Even though you're a creep, Ahaz. Relax, I'll take care of it. But the important verse for us this morning is, if you will not believe, surely you will not be established. Or you will not stand firm. You will not stand solid. If you won't believe. If you won't believe, you're not going to have confidence. It's going to be shaky for you. How many times does that apply to us? When we're in trouble and we read God's promises, I'll take care of you. I may not provide what you want, but I'll provide what you need. I will take care of you. And if we don't believe him, we're not on a solid foundation. Now, how do you think this guy responded? Let's flip back to 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 16, and we're in verse 6. At that time, Rezin, king of Syria, captured Elath for Syria and drove the men of Judah from Elath. Then the Edomites went to Elath and dwelt there to stay this day. So Ahaz is suffering some losses. Verse 7. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser. Great name if you guys are looking for a name for your kids. King of Assyria. This is Assyria, not Syria. This is Assyria. This is that guy that would put hooks in people's jaws when they caught him and was really cruel. So he sent messengers to the king of Assyria, saying, I am your servant and your son. Come up and save me from the hand of the king of Syria and from the hand of the king of Israel who rise up against me. Who's he putting his trust in? Is it God or somewhere else? He's taking control of his life and he's looking for someone else to save him. And Ahaz took the silver and gold that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house and sent it as a present to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria heeded him, for the king of Assyria went up against Damascus and took it and carried its people captive to Kir and killed Rezin. Ooh, there's one of the guys. He's gone now. Now King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and saw an altar and was at Damascus. Saw an altar that was at Damascus. And King Ahaz sent to Urijah, the priest, the design of the altar and its pattern according to all its workmanship. Then Urijah, the priest, built an altar according to all that King Ahaz had sent from Damascus. So Urijah, the priest, made it before King Ahaz came back from Damascus. And when the king came back from Damascus, the king saw the altar, and the king approached the altar and made offerings on it. So he burnt his burnt offering and his grain offering, and he poured his drink offering and sprinkled the blood of his peace offerings on the altar. He also brought the bronze altar, which was before the Lord, from the front of the temple, from between the new altar and the house of the Lord, and put it on the north side of the new altar. Then King Ahaz commanded Urijah the priest, saying, "On the great new altar, burn the morning burnt offering, the evening grain offering, the king's burnt sacrifice and his grain offering with the burnt offering of all the people of the land, their grain offering and their drink offerings, and sprinkle on it all the blood of the burnt offering and all the blood of the sacrifice. And the bronze altar shall be for me to inquire by." Thus did Urijah the priest according to all that King Ahaz commanded. So he's rearranging the furniture, the furnishings at the temple. Remember when God was talking to Moses up on the mountain and he said, "Build a tabernacle for me exactly as I tell you, because it's a representation of what's in heaven. You've got to do it exactly as I tell you." And here we have a king taking all this stuff and rearranging it because really he's not worshiping the Lord, he's worshiping the gods of Damascus. He's thinking, well, they're blessing those guys, they're winning in battle, so I'll worship them and then maybe I'll win in battle. Verse 17, "And King Ahaz cut off the panels of the carts and removed the laverus from them. And he took down the sea from the bronze oxen that were under it and put it on a pavement of stones. Also he removed the Sabbath pavilion which they had built in the temple. And he removed the king's outer entrance from the house of the Lord on account of the king of Assyria. Now the rest of the acts of Ahaz, which he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah?" Well, are they? Let's go over to the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah. So flip over to 2 Chronicles. And I'm in chapter 28. Now the difference between Kings and Chronicles, Kings really refers to the nation Israel, the 10 northern tribes, and some of the southern tribes, the southern two tribes. Chronicles refers to the southern two tribes, the house of Judah, and you'll find it's a little more spiritual in its writing. But we're going to take a look at Ahaz in 2 Chronicles chapter 28. Again, Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord as his father David had done. For he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel and made molded images for the Baals. He burnt incense in the valley of the son of Hinnom and burned his children in the fire. Notice it's not just one child here. It's two children. According to the According to the abominations of the nations before the nations whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. And he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. Verse 5, and this is after our event that we're reading about in Isaiah. "Therefore the Lord his God delivered him into the hand of the king of Syria. They defeated him and carried away a great multitude of them as captives and brought them to Damascus. Then he was also delivered into the hand of the king of Israel, who defeated him with a great slaughter. For Pekah, the son of Remaliah, killed 120,000 in Judah in one day, all valiant men, because they had forsaken the Lord God of their fathers. Zichri, the mighty man of Ephraim, killed Maaseiah, the king's son, Azricam, the officer over the house, and Elkanah, who was second to the king. And the children of Israel carried away captive of their brethren 200,000 women, sons, and daughters. And they also took away much spoil from them and brought the spoil to Samaria. So the northern tribes captured all these people from Judah. They're their cousins. And then as you read on here, you find that prophet speaks to them, well, you guys, what are you doing? God says you shall not enslave your family. And they repented, and they sent them all back and gave them clothing and so forth and sent them back. And we're not going to get into that today, but they responded properly. Let's jump down to verse 16. At the same time, King Ahaz sent to the kings of Assyria to help him. For again, the Edomites had come, attacked Judah, and carried away captives. The Philistines also had invaded, man, the Philistines from the south, also had invaded the cities of the lowlands and of the south of Judah, and had taken Beth Shemesh, Ajalon, Gedoroth, Sokoh with its villages, Timnah with its villages, and Gimzo with its villages. And they dwelt there, for the Lord brought Judah low because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had encouraged moral decline in Judah. That's the real problem. Ahaz had encouraged moral decline in Judah and had been continually unfaithful to the Lord. Also, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came to him and distressed him and did not assist him. This is the guy he sent the money to. For Ahaz took part of the treasuries from the house of the Lord, from the house of the king, and from the leaders, and gave it to the king of Assyria. But he did not help him. Now in the time of his distress, King Ahaz became increasingly unfaithful to the Lord. This is that King Ahaz. For he sacrificed to the gods of Damascus, which had defeated him, saying, because the gods of the kings of Syria helped them, I will sacrifice to them that they may help me. So here's his motivation. These guys that are beating me, they're sacrificing to this god, so I'll do the same thing and maybe it'll go better for me. But they were the ruin of him and all of Israel. So Ahaz gathered the articles of the house of God, cut in pieces the articles of the house of God, shut up the doors of the house of the Lord, and made for himself altars in every corner of Jerusalem. And in every single city of Judah, he made high places to burn incense to other gods, and provoked to anger the Lord God of his fathers. Now the rest of his acts and all his ways, from first to last, indeed, they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel, which we read. So let's go back to Isaiah. We're done with those two books. And now that we know his history, in chapters 1 and 2, we have the attacking armies, and their hearts are quivering. I mean, in verse 1 and 2. In verse 3, the Lord tells Isaiah, go now and talk to this guy and tell him, look, it, I'm going to take care of it. But if you don't believe in me, you won't be established. Let's go to verse 10. Moreover, the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Ask it either in the depth or in the height above. Look, it, just ask a sign and I'll prove to you I'm going to take care of you. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord. Now, this isn't an act of humility. This is not an act of respect. He's saying, this God I don't even care about. I'm looking to the God of Damascus, because look at, he's delivering these people. I don't want a sign from the Lord, the God of Israel. 13. Then he said, hear now, O house of David, is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will you weary my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. I'm going to give you a sign anyhow. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Ooh, who's that? This is an important verse. You don't want a sign? I'm going to give you a sign anyhow. There's going to be a virgin, and she's going to bear a son, and we're going to call his name God with us. And who was Jesus? He was God with us. He was God with flesh on. Now, this is one of those cases that we see many times in Isaiah where we have the near and the far. The near prophecy and the far prophecy. And of course, this virgin that's going to bear a son and his name's going to be called Emmanuel, that's a far prophecy. But for King Ahaz, there's also a near prophecy, as we'll read on. Apparently there was going to be this child, and he says, verse 15, curds and honey he shall eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good, in other words, before the age of accountability, before he's 12 years old, the land that you dread will be forsaken by both her kings. These two countries that are coming after you, before this child's 12 years old, they're going to be gone. Those countries are going to be totally gone. And they were. The Lord will bring the king of Assyria upon you and your people and your father's house, days that have not come since the day that Ephraim departed from Judah. And here's a near prophecy. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord will whistle for the fly, that is the farthest part of the rivers of Egypt, and for the bee that is in the land of Assyria. They will come, and all of them will rest in the desolate valleys and in the clefts of the rocks and on all the thorns and in all the pastures. In other words, Assyria and Egypt are going to invade you, buddy. In the same day, the Lord will shave with a hired razor with those from beyond the river, with the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the legs, and will also remove the beard. Now, Jim was sharing with me this morning that he likes to look ahead at the scripture, and he was looking for some songs that he could do, and he was thinking this would be a good verse to try to find a song to sing this morning for worship. He just couldn't seem to find one about shaving the head and the beard. Verse 21, just trying to keep you guys awake. It shall be in that day that a man will keep alive a young cow and two sheep. So it shall be from the abundance of milk they give that he will eat curds. For curds and honey everyone will eat who is left in the land. It shall happen in that day that wherever there could be 1,000 vines worth 1,000 shekels of silver, it will be for briars and thorns. With arrows and bows men will come there, because all the land will become briars and thorns. And to any hill which could be dug with the hoe, you will not go there for fear of briars and thorns, but it will become a range for oxen and a place for sheep to roam. In other words, this beautiful land is going to be desolate. All the crops and everything is going to just be desolate and wiped out. And this is a result of Ahaz leading Israel astray. The whole nation was turning away from the Lord. And so God is going to, you know, as he says, whistle to the flies and bees of these other kings and have them come and destroy the land. And he talks about the Assyrian invasion in verse 8, which Assyria did ultimately come and lead away all of the northern kingdom. Moreover, the Lord said to me, take a large scroll and write on it with a man's pen concerning Mahir Shalal Hashbaz. Now that was pretty good. I have a hard time with names, but I mean, I get an applause or something for that. Mahir Shalal Hashbaz. Yay! Thank you. And I will take for myself faithful witnesses to record Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Jeberechiah. Why do they come up with these names? And you know, we went to Israel and our guide was Moshe. Okay? What's your name? Moshe. That's Moses in Israeli. So you know they're not pronouncing them like this. You know it's some simple way that they pronounce it. But anyhow. So he's going to get these witnesses and he writes down. What are you going to write down? Verse 3. Then I went to the prophetess and she conceived and bore a son. The prophetess is Isaiah's wife. So he went to his wife and she conceived and bore a son. Then the Lord said to me, call his name Mahir Shalal Hashbaz, for before the child shall have knowledge to cry, my father and my mother, the riches of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria will be taken away before the king of Assyria. So Damascus is representing Syria, and the spoil of Samaria, that's the northern 10 tribes, will be taken away before the king of Assyria. Assyria is going to come and wipe out the northern 10 tribes. The Lord spoke to me again, saying, inasmuch as these people refuse the waters of Shiloh that flow softly and rejoice in instead rejoice in Rezin and in Remaliah's son, which is Pekah. Now therefore, behold, the Lord brings up over them the waters of the river, strong and mighty. The king of Assyria in all his glory, he will go up over all his channels and go over all his banks. Instead of enjoying the river Jordan in the promised land that God brought them to, they prefer this creepy king. And so he's going to bring the king of Assyria that lived up by the Euphrates River. They called it the river. So instead of enjoying the Jordan in that land, we're going to bring the Euphrates, and it's just going to flood you guys and overtake you. He will pass through Judah. He will overflow and pass over. He will reach up to the neck, and the stretching out of his wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. He's talking about Assyria invading. Be shattered, O you peoples, and be broken in pieces. Give ear, all you from far countries. Gird yourselves, but be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves, but be broken in pieces. Take counsel together, but it will come to nothing. Speak the word, but it will not stand, for God is with us. Verse 11, for the Lord spoke thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people. How did this people walk? Verse 12, do not say a conspiracy or a confederacy concerning all that this people call a conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. Don't be troubled by these two countries working together that are going to come and attack you. Instead, verse 13, the Lord of hosts, him you shall hallow. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. In Luke chapter 12, he says, you know, don't fear these people that can kill you and then can't do any more. Instead, fear God, who can send your soul to hell. Let God be your fear and your dread. And when you do that, if God is your fear and your dread, verse 14, he will be as a sanctuary, but a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense to both the house of Israel, as a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble. They shall fall and be broken, be snared and taken. I'm going to flip over to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. You don't have to flip there, but you can if you want. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 22. For the Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. And here we have, he'll be your sanctuary. But to those that don't believe, he's a stumbling block. They just can't deal with it. They stumble over God. He's a rock of offense, both to the house of Israel and a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. I'm in verse 15 of Isaiah. And many among them shall stumble. They shall fall and be broken, be snared and taken. Verse 16. And now Isaiah is really, he's the one speaking now. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, and I will wait on the Lord, who hides his face from the house of Jacob, and I will hope in him. Here am I and the children whom the Lord has given me. We are for signs and wonders in Israel. You know, his children's names are kind of strange, but they were also as a sign, if you look up the meaning of them. Quick loot, fast plunder. Great name. Here I am and the children whom the Lord has given me. We are for signs and wonders in Israel from the Lord of hosts who dwells in Mount Zion. And when they say to you, seek those who are mediums and wizards, who whisper and mutter, should not a people seek their God? Should they seek the dead on behalf of the living? Does that make sense? No, they're seeking this mystical, these mediums. Verse 20, to the law and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. They're not seeking the Lord. There's no light in them. Remember in 1 John, Jesus is the light. He's the light of men. In him, there's no darkness at all. We need to walk in the light. If these guys aren't even seeking Jesus or the Word, how can they walk in the light? They're walking in the darkness. Verse 21, they will pass through it hard pressed and hungry, and it shall happen when they are hungry that they will be enraged and curse their king and their God and look upward. In other words, when they're hungry spiritually. Then they will look to the earth and see trouble and darkness, gloom of anguish, and they will be driven into darkness. Pretty dark at the end of chapter 8. Chapter 9 begins to speak of the good news, the light. But we're going to stop here because we're out of time. The important thing for me, for my application, that I can apply today is verse 9, chapter 7, verse 9. If you will not believe, surely you shall not be established. And, you know, Jim confessed this morning as, you know, sometimes he doesn't crown Jesus Lord of all. And I confess, sometimes my faith wavers. And that's when I'm not established. But when I really trust in God and trust in what he says, it works. He's there. He's faithful. And I am established then. I am solid. I'm not wavering then. Lord, I know you're going to do it. I know you're going to do it. And the outcome is going to be good. Might not be what I expect, but the outcome is going to be good. And we've seen that trusting for jobs. I know, Bill, if I can use you, he really wanted the job with the dump out here. It didn't happen.